To Dr. John Science and the Paranormal Hour. And today I have an incredible show for you on the Shroud of Turin, which is the alleged burial cloth of Jesus. And many of you may know I was one of the original scientists involved in the study for over 30 years. I even had original samples from the Shroud, which I studied. And you're going to hear about things on the Shroud that you probably never heard about or read about before. Just to tell you a little bit about myself, I'm executive vice president for the Association of Scientists and Scholars International for the Shroud of Turin, known as the SIST, which is the largest and oldest Shroud research organization in the world. And I've lectured nationwide on the Shroud and published several articles and actually co-authored a book on the Shroud. And to start off with, maybe I can just give you some basics that the Shroud of Turin is a piece of ancient linen cloth which measures about 14.5 feet long by 3.5 feet wide. And why this cloth is so interesting is that there's a faint imprint of a human being on the cloth that many believe is the image of Jesus, that he was wrapped in this shroud after he was taken down from the cross and put in the tomb. And some miraculous manner, his image was impressed on the cloth. So picture a large cloth and you lay the body of Jesus on it and or a person on half the cloth, and then you fold it over the rest of the body. And therefore, you would get both a front and back imprint if an image was transferred onto the cloth. And therefore, I believe that this is what we want to study now and maybe look a little bit about at the history of the Shroud and some theories on how the imprint was made. Now, some of my research involved three-dimensional reconstruction of the image, and I'll talk a little bit about that. But it's important to know a little bit about the history because we really can't document precisely the location of the Shroud before 1357. In 1357, the Shroud was exhibited in Léry, France, and that is the first known appearance of the Shroud. Now, some people think it could have been the image of Odessa that goes back to the 10th century, but a lot of that is speculation. But we know for sure the Shroud was first exhibited in 1357 in Léry. So if it was a forgery, it would have to have been made prior to 1357, after 1357. So from Léry, France, the Shroud went to Chambéry, France, and it was actually subjected to a fire there. It almost got destroyed, and you can see marks on the Shroud from that fire. And then in 1578, it was brought across the Alps to Turin, Italy, where it remains to the present. And that's where you get the name the Shroud of Turin. So let me talk a little bit about what it looks like. When you look at the Shroud, there's this, again, long cloth, 14 feet long, and you see very, very faint sepia imprint of a body, both the frontal and the back imprint of the body. And it's hard to see sometimes. In fact, the farther back you are, the better you can see it. So not much was known about it until 1898, when a lawyer, actually Secundo Pia, an amateur photographer, took the first pictures of the Shroud. And it turned out that the image of the Shroud, as he developed it on his negative plate, turned into a positive image of the face, like a real three-dimensional looking face, where if you look at the Shroud directly, it was just faint and kind of mask-like and didn't have any features. But when you took a photograph of the Shroud, then it became, on the negative plate, a positive image. So being a photographer, he thought, well, that means the Shroud would be like a photographic negative. But photography wasn't invented until the 1800s. So how could something that we know existed back as far as 1357, 400 years before the invention of photography, be a negative? So the Shroud was put away, but pictures were taken and studies were done on the photographs. And what we found was that the markings of the man on the Shroud, the blood markings, resembled the crucifixion of Jesus. And I think that's fascinating because the question is, if this is the real Shroud, this will give us information on what happened to Jesus during his crucifixion, and maybe figure out how that image appeared on the shroud. What was the mechanism? Was it a miraculous mechanism, or just some type of chemical reaction, or what? So that's why I found, as a biophysicist, that's why I found the shroud so fascinating, because if you look at the shroud, and in 1978, there were studies done on it by the research team. And in fact, I worked with many of those members. And if you go to my website at GizaPyramid.com and you click on Shroud of Turin, you'll see a whole shroud tour, a picture tour. And those pictures were given to me by the chief documentary photographer, Barry Schwartz. So you're not going to get any better, images than going to my website. They're really very clear. But you can see that the image on the shroud, the man has the typical marks of crucifixion. There are puncture wounds through the wrist, and we've shown that nails placed through the palms would not sustain the weight of the body. So they would have to be placed through the wrists in order to sustain the body. And on the shroud, the puncture wounds are found on the wrist. And that's more evidence that if somebody was going to forge it, they would probably have put the nail through the palm, like in most icons of Jesus's crucifixion. So that is very interesting. And there's puncture wounds in the feet and in the side. You remember Jesus was supposedly punctured with a lance on his side, and blood and water emerged. Now, I know many of you are familiar with these pictures, and unfortunately on the radio, I can't show photos of it, but you can go to my website and actually see some of these images. Now, what I find very fascinating about this whole thing is that the blood, and a lot of people don't know this, they said the shroud could be a painting. Well, our research team showed that there were no pigments, dyes, or stains that made up the image on the shroud. That is, it couldn't be a painting. And the image is only about a couple fibers that deep into the cloth. Any paints or dyes would penetrate into the cloth. But think about it. A single fiber has about 100 fibrils, and the shroud image is only on the top couple. So it's a very superficial image. Now, this is interesting. If it was a painting, there's no image under the blood. So the artist would have to have put the blood on the cloth first, and then the image was formed afterwards. So an artist couldn't do that. An artist wouldn't be able to like guess where all the blood stains would be and then paint an image around that. That would be impossible. So obviously the shroud image, when it was produced, was not able to penetrate the blood stains and make a mark on the cloth. And that's very important, you know. And I think one thing we have to keep in mind is that we really don't have a lot of definitive answers, you know. And I think what I'm trying to do is to put together a lot of the findings and hopefully have time to do that to give you some idea of what is happening. Let me see. Anything else I want to say about the physiology? A lot of people, one of our president of our research team who passed away, Dr. Fred Zugabe, who was the chief medical examiner of Rockland County, basically thought that the person on the shroud died of asphyxiation. Because if you hang from your arms, you'll fall and not able to breathe and then try to lift yourself up to breathe. And eventually you would suffocate, and that was, he feels, the cause of death. But again, we don't know for sure. And if you look at the face, you'll see like a markings that could resemble a crown of thorns, puncture wounds, that if somebody put a crown of thorns on, it would produce those blood marks. The face has bruises, so the man was bruised. If you look at the back, there are markings due to a whipping, which looks like some kind of flagellum. And I tell you, I am really, that to me has one of the most evidence of anything, because we have discovered these Roman flagellums in archaeological finds. And what they are a piece of wood with leather strips with bone or metal at the end, like in the shape of dumbbells. So when you would whip a person, that would dig into their skin. And when you pulled it out, it would leave a dumbbell shaped mark. And so that was markings that kind of show archaeological and medically that most likely the man was kind of whipped by some ancient torturing device. And I'm kind of sorry, I kind of ran off with this because I was so excited, and I want to welcome my co-host Seraphine Hurley. So hi Seraphine, sorry I kept on going here.
It's all right.
I apologize, and thanks again. I just kind of went over the basics again of the blood stains and the markings. Now the question is this really the burial cloth of Jesus? Could it be somebody else who was crucified and had the same kind of markings? And we could never answer that. We're not sure. But for some reason, this cloth was preserved and passed down, and we know it's at least 400 years old. Actually, we can date it back to the 4th or 5th century. There's certain manuscripts, one known as the Hungarian Prime Manuscript, that's 1,000 years old, that actually depicts the shroud, and it has markings on the shroud that make no sense, which shows the artist must have copied it from the shroud. So, Seraphine, do you remember looking at an image of the shroud with the blood stains? And I was wondering what your impression was.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting.
Was it kind of eerie to look at that?
Yeah, from a standpoint of reliquary and things of that and paranormal, yes, it's kind of creepy.
And you know, I wanted to ask you that because I hardly ever tell the story how I first found out about the shroud. I was a graduate student at Johns Hopkins, and one of my wife's cousins visited her home, and he was like kind of a Jesus freak, to be honest. And he showed me a pamphlet of the shroud, and I looked at it and I thought, wow, this is like really weird. You know, it doesn't look like something you'd see every day. And that's when I thought, oh, you know, when I have some spare time, I want to look into it. And what was so funny was my mother-in-law said the person who actually got the 1978 studies approved by the Pope and the Archbishop was Father Peter Rinaldi, who had a church in the next town, and my mother-in-law knew her personally. So she set up a meeting with Father Rinaldi when he was over from Turin, Italy, because that's where he was born. He was, by the way, an altar boy, Seraphine, in 1933 when the shroud was exhibited, and he wanted to dedicate his life to the shroud. So I went over because I thought someday I want to tell my kids I met Father Rinaldi. And when I left his office, I had pictures and slides, and he kind of recruited me and had me get in touch with the original research team. And here I am 35 years later. And so let's see. What I want to do is, did you have any questions on the shroud before I kind of maybe go into some of the image formation theories? Anything you'd like to ask or bring up?
Oh, not at this time. Go ahead.
Well, the other interesting thing is, as I mentioned, in 1898, the first photographs were taken. I always say the shroud is amazing because only in the last 100 years have we developed the technology necessary to unlock its secrets. So, you know, 1357, 400 years later, photography is invented and the shroud appears to be a negative imprint. Then an instrument called the VP8 Image Analyzer, which I used in my research, which NASA uses, does three-dimensional reconstructions and a cellular and all kinds of things. And one of the scientists found out the shroud had three-dimensional information encoding in it. So if you put a picture of the shroud in the VP8 Image Analyzer, it produces a three-dimensional picture of the shroud. So, I mean, this is kind of amazing. Again, another thing to rule out that it could have been painted. The other thing in 1978, a lot of studies were done on samples that were removed from the shroud. 3M company developed special hydrocarbon tape that when you put against the shroud and then you like rip it off, it will remove fibers, which then we could take home and then study them, because they wouldn't allow us to take a scissors, and cut a piece off. And I had in my possession quite a few of those fibers for several weeks, maybe a month, to do some studies, which I did. And actually one sample was a blood sample that was removed from the shroud. And I always joke and say, if the shroud happens to be the real burial cloth of Christ, and I'm not saying it is yet, we'll talk about that, I could say I actually held the blood of Jesus in my hand. So, but I got to admit, I was really mostly interested at this time as a scientist. I don't even think I was a Christian. But, question for you, Seraphine. The original research team, do you think most people were Christians, atheists, scientists? If you just had a guess, what do you think the makeup would be?
What do you mean?
Do you think most people who got interested in the shroud got interested in the research because they were religious or because they were scientists?
Probably because they were scientists and wanted to know the truth of it.
Exactly. And that's what I wanted people to realize, that I would say that would be 70% of the members. A lot of people don't know this, but there were some that are, that were Christians and obviously felt this was a sacred relic. And like I said, at that point, I don't even know what I was. I was probably more interested in the occult and the paranormal, or actually just getting through my graduate program. But it did draw me as a scientist, not really as somebody who wanted to prove that the shroud was a religious artifact. So I'm going through a lot because obviously there's so much information, but I want to give you in 1 hour everything that I feel is important that you should know about the shroud. And I got to be honest, not much has changed in the last 10 or 20 years since we studied it. A lot of theories and books and this and that. But I was involved with the original team. Father and all, they recruited me to start the second largest team. Actually, we were the largest team in the world at that time. And I had samples of the shroud, and I was privy to a lot of information that others weren't. One thing I bet most people listening who've even studied the shroud for years and years don't know this, because I don't even know if it was ever put in print. But if you look at the sole of the foot where the imprint is, on the backside, they actually found dirt in that imprint. And I don't know if anybody has studied it, but that was one of the things that I knew when, I was under confidentiality, but now that's no longer. And so I also saw the fold marks with x-ray pictures of the shroud, which showed how it could be folded and only the face, the center. And that would put more evidence that before the shroud appeared in Leary, France in 1357, it may have been framed so just the face was showing. And that is what the image of Odessa is. So after 1357, to summarize, it went to, again, as I mentioned, from Leary, it went to Chambéry, France, and then to Turin. But here's what's interesting. Between the time it was in Odessa, Turkey, if the image of Odessa was the shroud, Ian Wilson feels it is, and so do I, between 944 and around 1204, it disappeared. Okay, but then between 1204 and 1357, we don't know its location, and a lot of people think it could have been in the possession of the Knights Templars. I think that's fascinating because I'm in a Knights Templar group, and I think that, again, a lot of speculation. So we're left with an image now, and I know I ran through the anatomical stuff pretty quickly because I think a lot of people are familiar with that. Image blood stains on the forehead from possibly a crown of thorns, nail wounds in the wrist, not the palm, because the palm couldn't hold up a body. It would rip through, puncture wounds in the feet, and a scourging on the back. And there's also bruise marks on the shoulder that we estimate was caused by a 50 to 100 pound object, which would have been the weight of a crossbeam. of a cross, a wooden cross in the Roman times. Usually the upright portion remained in the ground at the site of crucifixion, and then they would attach the person to the cross beam and then attach that to the upright. No, it's gruesome, but that's what the crucifixion was. So all these different marks on the shroud really, to the letter, resemble the biblical description of Jesus, and even beyond that. Because like I said, most icons picture the wounds in the palm, not in the wrist. But again, anatomically, the wrist would not hold the body. And now we know, by the way, through archaeological evidence, crucifixions were done by the wrist because the carpal bones could put the, the strength of holding the body up. So let's see. What do you, Seraphine, anything you think I missed in terms of the anatomical stuff before I get into maybe some of the theories, or anything you'd like to read, add, or any questions?
No, not at this time. I need to check the chat room.
Yeah, let me know if there's any questions, because usually I was on a national lecture circuit. I traveled all over the country for 2 years giving talks at all major universities. And my talk usually was a couple hours, and I usually wound up spending an hour with questions. People were very, very interested. And actually, I learned more from questions from the students than I did from the adults, because they seem to have an insight that as we get older, we lose. So if you get any questions, Seraphine, just interrupt me. So we kind of rule out the painting theory, because the image is a surface phenomena, doesn't penetrate into the cloth. There are no pigments, dyes, or stains that were found. Now, I have to address Walter McCrone, who was one of the world's top microscopists who studied the shroud. Was there a question, Seraphine, do you know?
Yes, there is a question. Chad in the YouTube chat room is asking, do you believe that it's possible that the shroud image could have been possibly created by a sudden burst of radiation?
Well, that's a really good question, because a lot of scientists, thank you for that question. A lot of scientists recently, it seems like when you rule out all the scientific theories, now mine does explain it in a natural way, but I don't have all the answers, but some propose like a burst of X-rays or energy or gamma rays, and some have tried to reconstruct that. And some of the work is pretty convincing. So, you know, if you're a believer, let's say, in the resurrection of Jesus, and you believe the shroud is the burial cloth of Christ, at this time, I'm going to give you the punchline now, even though I haven't gone over the theories, we really can't describe the image. It's still a mystery how it was produced. And so that opens up now to me metaphysical and paranormal explanations. And what the person who asked that question, the answer is yes, it's possible. There's no proof, but there is some evidence that may show there's some kind of radiation. We thought it could have been a scorch, but a scorch fluoresces under UV light, and this doesn't fluoresce. So like the blood would fluoresce. So we don't think it's produced by a scorch, but radiation, X-ray, gamma ray, who knows, neutrino bursts, that is being explored by many, many physicists. And it's very promising. So if I had more time, I would actually be able to go into some of those theories. Is there any other questions from the chat room? I just love questions on the shroud.
Not at this time.
We got to wake the chat room people up, you know. well, let's see. Maybe I'll talk briefly about my work. Carbon 14 test. I got it, you know. That's even more important than my work. So back in 1988, and I was involved in the shroud. In fact, I actually visited one of the carbon 14 labs that were going to do the test when I spoke at the University of Arizona. The Vatican gave permission, or the Archbishop, I should say, who was custodian at that time, to have a sample removed from the shroud and sent to three independent carbon-14 testing labs. Now, obviously, linen is made of carbon, and the date would give you when the plant was cut down. And, you know, let's see, has it come out to be 2,000 years, or, you know, a modern date. So the three labs that it was sent to was the University of Arizona, the one I visited, Oxford in the UK, and the Federal Institute of Technology in Zurich. And the British Museum supervised the test. So everyone was waiting and anticipation, and they had this big press conference. And they came out, they wrote on the blackboard, the dating of all three labs, you know, experimental error, fell between 1260 and 1390 AD. And it was like, oh, the shroud is a forgery, because remember, it didn't appear to 1357. The dates correspond to when it seemed to be in the public view. And the carbon dating shows, you know, it's only 400 or 500 years old. So I got to say, that was a big blow to a lot of the researchers. But again, the scientists didn't just give up. They, you know, you want to, the tests are only as good as the data, right? You know, if you don't have good data, or your sample is not a good sample or a representative sample, you're going to get faulty conclusions or faulty test results. So it turned out when we studied, they only cut off one sample, one little piece of cloth towards the bottom, and then cut it into three pieces and sent it to the three labs. But they took it at the side of the shroud, and several of the scientists and the team later studied that sample that was removed and also analyzed chemically that side and concluded that that side was not part of the original shroud. And you can actually see the seam of where it was sewn. Now, why would somebody sew a side strip on a relic? Well, the shroud image was off center. So by adding that little piece of cloth, it would center the image. So we believe, again, we're not sure, that that side strip was actually added in the medieval times before they, you know, when they were exhibiting it to center the image, or also maybe to hold it so they wouldn't have to touch the shroud. But chemically, that side strip and the shroud are different. And again, it's a theory. And I kept saying since 1988, we need to get different samples from the center, from, you know, but obviously the Vatican is not too thrilled. And do you remember hearing about the carbon 14, Serafina? I was wondering what your response was. Well, you were probably too young at that time, right? So
yeah, the only thing that I heard about with the Shroud of Turin is that my mother had an interest in it. She had a lot of books on the subject. It was a huge deal. I remember seeing the face of the shroud, which was on a lot of books at the time. And the only thing that I've ever seen is being in and seeing the X-ray copies and stuff like that I've actually seen that are fairly impressive.
Did she believe it was the burial cloth of Christ? Just curious.
I believe that it's a possibility. Let's put it that way. It's a possibility.
Did your mom believe it?
Does my mom believe it? Yes.
I'm just curious because I've noticed in more of the older devotional people, I guess I'm an older devotional person now, tend to accept it more readily than, you know, people like me when I was younger being a scientist. So that's interesting. That's a great story. But a lot of people who remember seeing it for the first time or getting a book on it were very touched. And at that time, there really weren't a lot of skeptical books. Now there are. And I got to be honest with you, they don't really make good points. They can't prove anything. It's so speculation. They use wrong data. And I'd be the first to admit that, you know, it's a painting or this or that. Nobody's been able to reproduce it, by the way. A lot of artists have tried. They tried all kinds of stuff, camera obscura, paintings, rubbing, etchings. And, you know, some of them claim, oh, yeah, this is similar. But when you put it next to the shroud, it's different. And it also doesn't exhibit the 3D effects, you know, the VP8 image analyzer. So, I'm not saying it is the burial cloth of Christ, but I'm saying with all the money, time, and effort that scientists have put into that, it is like amazing. We haven't come to figure out how it was produced. And I got sidetracked. I was looking at Walter McCrone, who said it was a painting because he found pigments on the shroud. Yeah, but the pigments weren't enough to produce a visible image. So, you know, like a second class relic, right, Seraphine? You take a relic and you put it up to a first class relic, you touch it. That was a typical practice in the medieval times. So people may have painted the shroud, copied it, you know, artists, and then touched it to it to pick up that, the energy, right? And we know that in our work, right? In the kind of the paranormal area, correct?
Yes, it's pretty common. Mm-hmm.
And that's why people like crystals, because they think crystals can, you know, pick up energy. And I know when I display my crystal skulls, a lot of people like to put their little crystal next to it. Now, you know, whether it's picking up energy or not, and I believe it is, that was a common practice. So that's where we believe the pigments came from. It's just a contaminant. Because when we studied it spectroscopically, the amount of pigments would not be enough to make up the image. Now, Walter McCrone died. I met him. I did some microscopy with him, actually, when he was at the 3M company. He was given a seminar there, and I was invited by the scientists there who knew me. And that's how I got to meet him and talk to him a little bit about the shroud. And obviously, you know, we had our differences, but he was a very graceful man, a gracious man. I really liked him, and it was considered one of the top microscopists in the world. I'm getting sidetracked here, but he's the one also that said the Vinland map was a fake. And now I have questions about that. And I know the person who sold it to Yale, so that's that could be a whole nother show. But anyway, what are we doing here? Maybe I'll talk a little bit about my theory. I guess I don't need to look it up. If I don't know my theory by now, I'm in big trouble. So here's the problem we're at. We got this image of a man on this cloth. How was it produced? One possibility is a direct contact, that the cloth went against the body. We'll just use the face as an example, okay? So the cloth touched the body, covered the body, and maybe oils or perspiration or whatever, chemicals from the body that leaked out, stained the cloth, and produce the image. Well, first of all, why would it just be confined to the surface? But we can ignore that. But if you put ink all over your face, which I'm sure you want to do right after the show, right? And then you put a cloth up to it and press it and you open it, it will be distorted, right? You know, it just, so that's known as a direct contact hypothesis, but it doesn't show what the shroud would look like. You know, the sides would be out and so. And another theory was the vapographic technique, that the shroud didn't come in direct contact, the body didn't come in direct contact with the cloth, but the gases or vapors diffused and then combined with chemicals on the shroud. But if you do diffusion calculations, you could no way get the resolution, you know, the clarity on the shroud as we see it. There's no way, any kind of vapographic calculation. So part of it could be by direct contact, like the front, you got the nose, which looks in the back, but then the sides, no. So I came up with a theory. It's like I took a little bit from everybody, right? Called the direct contact revised vapographic theory. Or what did I call it? Revised vapographic direct contact theory. And what I thought is there are two processes at work. One is that areas that touched the cloth, blood or whatever was transferred. Now, people under crucifixion have undergone torture. So did you have a question, Seraphine, or from the audience?
Yes, there's a question from the room.
Yes.
Chad was wondering if at all possible, because at that time period, it was possible that Jesus could have been buried with aloes and myrrhs and things like that. Have they ever done any testing to the cloth to find out what other chemical compounds would have been on it besides blood?
Excellent, Chad. Yes, they did find that. They found natron, which is a desiccant, and they did find aloes. Excellent question. Yes, exactly. And so that could have added to it. That could have maybe produced some kind of developing process that was transferred. And in my studies, I found out that, and this is, I mean, not my studies, but common physiological knowledge, that a person who, say, underwent crucifixion or torture would have higher contents of lactic acid in their blood. So I propose that the lactic acid oxidize the cloth and produce the image in the direct contact places, but in the areas that are further out, it was a diffusion method. But you can see right away the fault with my theory. It would not just produce a surface image, right? It would penetrate.
Yes.
Now, I heard, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that Chad had also asked if going on that if it was possible that any of those, you know, lanolins or MERS or ALA could have been part and parcel of creating the image itself.
Yes, I think so. I think in my theory, yes, definitely, that it could have contributed to the direct contact aspect, and who knows, maybe even the diffusion. I never pursued that, to be honest with you. Other scientists have, and I haven't really kept up on where they are with that, but yeah, they've been, the problem is, you know, getting access to the shroud. But Chad, that was a really, really excellent question. So whenever I give my talk and I propose my theory, the other thing is that, you're going to love this, Seraphine, because you're a rare book collector and an artifact collector like me. You know, you have books that you have plants that have maybe been pressed in the book, and the book may be like 100 years old. Have you seen those?
Yes, I have a first edition to Edgar Allan Poe that's got a four-leaf clover in it.
Whoa, wow. And yeah. Is there like a sepia imprint of the clover?
Kind of, but not really. It's a little bit of edging, but not enough to make it completely foxed over.
Okay, so it's great. You get an idea of what it looks like.
Yeah.
Well, this is my contribution to the shroud. If I had to say my major contribution, which isn't so major, but there was a person known as Dr. Jean Voltwanger, who was a pharmacist in Paris. And he called those, I named them. I called the plant images Voltwanger patterns. So I actually coined the term, and I got a letter from him thanking me. He was like in his 90s at that time and wanted to congratulate me on my theory using his work. But he was the first to say that the image on the shroud looked very similar to the image that those plants produce placed in a book left for hundreds of years or, you know, 50 years. They're sepia color. They have high resolution, but they're not a surface phenomena. Okay. So I got to point out the errors. So I decided to do a scientific comparison between the plant images, which I call the Voltwanger patterns, and the shroud images. And I used a spectrophotometer, which measured the color differentials, and I found out they're almost exact with an experimental error, same color. They also exhibit the same ultraviolet characteristics. And this is my research. I put the Voltwanger patterns, the plant images, under VP8 image analyzer, and guess what? I reconstructed the plant image in 3 dimensions. I was the first to do that. So what I basically said is I think I found an occurrence in nature that is closest to how the image was produced. Now, there is differences, like I said. You know, it's not a surface phenomena, and there are probably other ones. So that's the model I use. And then studying the plant images, I found out that they were pretty much produced by lactic acid that oxidized the cellulose in the paper. And then, you know, the similarity between that and the man in the shroud. But again, I, you know, to be honest, 60%, my theory probably explains 60% of the data. So I don't think it's one that really is going to explain it unless somebody took it a step further, you know, and found out some things I was missing. What do you think of that idea? I mean, it's a good guess, huh?
I would say so. If you had to throw a dart in the dark, that's pretty good.
Well, you know, I just can't believe, I guess I can. I was the first to actually think of doing that scientific comparison. But again, maybe, you know, like you and I are rare book collectors, right? This is stuff we see all the time. Most scientists probably aren't. And, you know, I bet it would have caught your attention too if you were on the team thinking, hey, you know, I got this first edition and this looks like, you know, the color looks similar. Maybe I should The other thing too, you know, I had access, being a professor at the time, when I did these studies, to a lot of this equipment, and I used other universities. So I was fortunate, you know, to have that. Do you have any comments or questions so far? I think I got about another 10 minutes here. Excuse me. Anything?
Yeah, you've got about 15. You've got about 15 minutes.
You're good for about 15, boss.
You got any questions, Joe? Oh, he's gone. I'm the station owner. All right. Well, Joe, if you can hear me and you have any questions, come on back. Did you have anything else you want to ask Seraphine or comment on? Oh, hello, Seraphine.
No, I was saying, did you notice anything strange or miraculous that happened while you were working around the shroud?
That's a damn good question. You know, very few people ask me that. And to me, that's important. And I'm sorry to disappoint you, but no. I would love to say that, you know, I felt, you know, the presence of Jesus or this or that, you know. No, I don't know if it's a combination that I don't want to say I was an atheist at that time. I just really wasn't. I was interested in science and my research and, you know, I was always interested in the paranormal since elementary school. But at that point in my life, it was more science. But Seraphine, this is a funny story. When I was given the sticky tape samples, I think there were about 4 or 5 of them mounted on slides. And God, when I got those in, I was just so excited to be able to look at the samples, because I wasn't part of the team in 78. I got involved in 79. And then I worked with the team members at that time. In fact, I even went to the director's home in Colorado and spent a couple of days with him going over the data. I kept in contact with a lot of team members. And in fact, I was actually going to ask Barry Schwartz to come on and do this show, because Barry has been on my shows before and actually does a better job than me. He's really good. He was the chief photographer. And he's Jewish, actually. So it's interesting. Some members, yes, have felt things. I won't describe those because they were personal. But the funny thing was, so I got the samples in, right? You know, and I thought, oh my God, I got to look at these. So I went to the lab, and it was after, you know, the college pretty much was closed down. It was 6 or 7. And I'm in the lab grabbing their best high-powered stereoscopic microscope. And oh my God, it was like a kid at the candy store. I'm looking at the samples, because without getting into detail, besides my research on it, I had to bring it to another research group to do some studies, and they did some, but then had to stop. And so I'm looking at it, and somebody walks into the lab, and it was one of the other basic science professors. Actually, she was director of the division at that time, and she was a former nun, okay? Now, she knew I worked on the shroud, of course, because when I was hired, they knew I was on a lecture circuit, but she didn't know I had the samples. So she walks in the lab, and I said, "Hey, so-and-so, you want to see the blood of Jesus?" And her face just dropped, knowing that I probably had samples, and just zoom, took off to the microscope. Isn't that a great story? You know?
Yeah.
And anyway, but no, I didn't. I wish I did. You know, I keep saying I'm not very psychic, and others. I did show pictures of the shroud to several psychics I knew that were students of mine at that time, and they said they see 2 angels on each side of it guarding it. And that's when I first heard the theory that important relics are guarded by 2 angels. And I remember that ring I have that I've shown you, we talked about, that maybe a special ring. One of the psychics I worked with said, "I see 2 big angels guarding it," and I never said anything about it. So it's interesting. I don't know if that's a law of the spiritual universe, that relics, important relics, at least of Christianity, maybe of other religions, are protected by, angels. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Nothing else in the chat room, I guess, right? Or you'd be coming back.
Not yet. I just asked.
Anything you want to ask, or if Joe's listening? I do want to say, by the way, Saturday, and I thought it was this Saturday and I could announce it, and I'm sorry I didn't announce it on my last show, but this last Saturday, the Shroud was on live TV from the cathedral, and they had some talks and displays, and I can't find the YouTube video of it. I don't know if they even took it or put it on there, but I've been searching all day for it so I could link it. But it was actually on TV, and I think it was supposed to be 200th anniversary, I think, of Don Bosco. I can't remember, but there was a reason for it. But I thought that was great because a lot of people can't go to church now, and to be able to, I missed it because I kept thinking I got the dates mixed up. Every date's the same to me now that I'm kind of locked down. But I that was last Saturday. So once in a while, the Shroud comes out for a quick display, like in 2002. It's really funny. The director of our research team, the general projects director who passed away, went at the 2002, or I can't remember, the 2000 exposition. He was in the audience when they were going to display the Shroud. It was a special viewing and it was going to be a mass. And they said, absolutely no pictures or photography. And he had his video camera and he couldn't resist. And he started, you know, like sneaking some videos. And then he realized, oh my God, you know, there's like a light, I guess that blinks, you know, and that you're taking a video. And all of a sudden, one of the high priests over there who was running it starts walking over to him and he thinks, oh my God, they're going to throw me out. And comes over and says, Mr. Maloney, would you like to do one of the prayers during the mass? How do you like that? What an honor. And he got to do a prayer during a mass of the Holy Shroud. He wasn't even Catholic either, by the way. So, kind of neat, huh?
Yeah, that's an honor.
Yeah, maybe they would have asked me to tell the joke at the end of mass, huh? Probably as far as I would have gotten. So I have so many stories about it. And here's the other thing, too. And I hate to say this, there's been a lot of fighting over the Shroud between scientists and others. And, you know, some people thought they had more rights to it or more possession or could do this. And it was really sad to see some of this. But people are human. And that was one of the reasons that Father Rinaldi asked me to start the ASSIST research team, because he felt it should be opened up to more scientists, more interdisciplinary studies. And that's what that's why we called it ASSIST, to assist other researchers, to make the study and research available. So I guess I got a couple minutes left. I could go on for another hour. Do you have any questions that you want to ask before I end, Seraphine, or any? I'd like to get your comments, what you kind of think of what I talked about, any kind of... I believe the Shroud is the burial cloth of... I think the verdict is still out. We need more testing. So do you have any feelings on that?
Yeah, it does need more testing, but at the same time, here's an Easter message for y'all. Remember that Jesus Christ is supposed to be God embodied as a man, but he was a man. So right. There may not be anything more plain about the fact that he was just a man at the end.
It's a very good point. And also to keep in mind Chad's question, maybe when science fails, we're just left with the miraculous. And that's what we call the resurrection. Maybe I'll leave it at that. Maybe the Shroud is proof of a resurrection of Jesus Christ, and science is never going to be able to figure it out how it was produced. And with that, I want to wish all of you a happy Holy Week, happy Easter, whatever religion, belief you have. I send you my blessings and love. Thank you for listening, and God bless you all, and we will see you next Monday, same time, same place. Thank you, Seraphine. Thank you, Joe, and God bless you all.
Yes, and this has been John DeSavo's Science and Paranormal Hour. You've been listening to on UPRNTalkRadio.com 107.7 FM in New Orleans. And thank you. Have a great Holy Week if you are celebrating. If not, just have an excellent rest of your week, and you'll be able to catch us next Monday at the same time, same channel. You can also find Dr. John DeSalvo on his social media is John DeSalvo or 007. So he's pretty easy to find. So enjoy yourselves and stay safe.
Please mention your show, Seraphine, because Seraphine has two excellent shows on this network. Really, really wonderful shows. Can you mention those, their times and their names?
Thank you. My first show is Infinite Inquisition, and that is Mondays right before this show. It is at 3 o'clock Central Time. And then tomorrow night with my best friend and partner in crime, Lurlie Potvin, I have Tripping the Void, which is at 9 p.m. Central Time. And they're both really great shows. They're really fun. We do a lot of talking about a lot of strange subjects and always kind of roundtable it. And you're always welcome to join us live there. Thank you.
Yeah, they're really wonderful shows. And again, check the UPRNTalkRadio.com website, and there's tons of different shows. And Joe Montaldo, the station owner, does a wonderful job, and we thank him. And thank you. I almost forgot to say you need to do the final credit. So thank you, Seraphine, and thank you for all you do. And thank you, Joe. And I guess good night, and hope somebody's going to turn us off. Gee, I should have kept going.
Joe will come get us there. Yeah, I just messaged Joe.
So anyway.
I got you. I thought I was talking to y'all. Apparently I had my mic off, just talking away, yapping away. No, I was just saying. I said it could be anything, man. It could be any strange thing out there in the world.
Yeah. Hey, I got Seraphine, I got to apologize.